All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast with Shane and Brandon. As always, how are you guys doing today?
Well, pretty good for the most part. I mean, dying from the heat, which I'm sure is nothing compared to what Brandon is dealing with, but you know.
Yeah, well, what's the weather like in your neck of the woods? Roker would say, Brandon.
Yeah, I live in perpetual hell. I live in what's considered pretty much the epitome of hell. Although today, believe it or not, today, my friends, is not that bad. Today, 84 feels like 87. Humidity is only about, well, I shouldn't say only, but it's at 50%. It's not that bad. And a little bit of a breeze. So today is actually not hell. Problem is, by next week, it will be. Sunday will be 93, Monday 96, and Tuesday 99. And that's not even counting humidity.
Oh, heavens on earth.
Yeah.
So much fun.
I mean, in Seattle, we're all so pasty white that it's like...
when it's, yeah. Oh, and I'm not?
When it's... No, but I mean, like... No, but I mean, you're also, you know, like... You're a little Mediterranean, Puerto Rican, little islander.
But I don't tan. Like, I don't tan, I burn.
No. But I'm saying, like, as far as heat goes...
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
I
here...
I can handle it, yeah.
Northern European.
Yeah.
Yep.
Used to, like, 20 degrees. But, yeah, anyways.
Yeah. Let's talk about some other place that is probably hot and humid. San Francisco. Let's talk about the 49ers. Brandon...
It's not hot and humid there. It's very cool there.
Is it cool there today? Jesus.
No, I mean,
isn't it like one of the coldest places in California?
It's like one of the coldest places in the entire country during the summer.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the 49ers. Brandon, what does this team have to do to win the Super Bowl?
I think at this point, it's just, they've done this before, but I think you have to just, the only team in your way right now is the Chiefs. Obviously they beat you, but it's just like, how can you finish off games or more importantly, and I said this before, I think I said this last year, can Brock Purdy get out of the game manager mode and take it to another level? And I look at it, they have all the pieces to win. They still do. I mean, look at that roster from top to bottom. Purdy, CMC, Samuel, Ayuk, Kittle. We don't know what's going to happen. Ayuk is kind of – it's a weird kind of place right now. But assuming, for the most part, Ayuk, Kittle, Kyle Juszczyk, one of the best fullbacks – not the best fullback in football. Trent Williams, who's older but still really good. You know, Leonard
still
Floyd.
Still amazing, yeah.
Yeah, Leonard Floyd, Nick Bosa, Greenlaw, Warner, you know, Ward, you know, my boy Javon Hargrave. They're fine all the way around to me. But it's just, you know, this is a team that almost lost to the Lions, who had an awful defense. That goes without saying. But it's just, if you look at that game and you look at the Chiefs game, and like I keep saying it all the time and people don't believe me, but I will say it again. Brock Purdy is a glorified game manager and there's been nothing to convince me otherwise. And I like the kid. I do like him a lot. I'm not knocking him, but and he's probably right now the best game manager of football, but because he has all the, but a lot of those are his weapons. You know, it's, we talk about like, you know, Goff being a game manager or, you know, one of those kind of guys. But what we don't talk about is that Goff can do it with injuries. He can do it, and he's done it with, he's won with a lesser roster. So.
And he's got a deep ball.
Yeah, and he does have a deep ball. Brock Purdy, like, people want to say that Brock Purdy has, like, the most air yards or has a good deep ball. I'm like, his guys are open by 10 yards. I can make that throw. Like, a lot of it has to do with his weapons. And when one of those weapons goes down, what happens? He craps the bed. So, you know, I need to see him take it to that next level if they're going to win a Super Bowl, because everything else is fine. Defense, arguably are pretty much the best in football. Offense, best offensive weapons in football. They are complete top to bottom. It's just, can you do more than a game manager to win it? Because we saw that you tried to game manage against the Chiefs, and that didn't work. So, I mean, you know, you can't game manage against Patrick Mahomes. Because Jalen Hurts didn't. Jalen Hurts took him to the limit. And Jalen Hurts also beat him in the regular season. I'm of course going to use my own quarterback, but other quarterbacks have gone, not very many, but other quarterbacks have gone toe-to-toe with Mahomes and done what's necessary to try to beat him. I haven't seen Brock Purdy do that against really anybody yet, anybody of higher quality or equal quality as the Niners. So, I mean, look what happened, I believe, when they played the Ravens, or no, that wasn't the Ravens. Oh, no, he got knocked down in the Ravens game. But the Ravens put a hurting on that team in that regular season game. An absolute beating. So I'm not convinced this team can win a Super Bowl until Brock Purdy shows he can go above and beyond pretty much what he's done. And he has to be able to do that. And I think he can, but he hasn't shown it yet.
Yeah. I think he definitely is capable of that. Like you said, we haven't seen it yet, but you know, we know that he has all the tools. It's just putting it together. And I think the other piece to this puzzle that people don't really talk about is, you know, when it comes to Shanahan himself, I mean, when he needs to adjust based off of what's happening in the game, mm-hmm. he rarely does. You know, I mean, he, to his credit, a lot of times he doesn't have to because, I mean, usually because he has such a great scheme going for him. I mean, half the league is trying to copy him. So a lot of times he doesn't need to adjust, but when he does need to, he doesn't. Or he just, like what we saw in the Super Bowl, he, you know, thinks that Purdy's just like going to turn into Josh Allen all of a sudden, and that's just not his game. You know, so I think it's on both of them. I think Purdy needs to be able to step it up and be the guy, be able to put his team on his back, and which, you know, that's not the most fair position to put your guy in, but you know, when you're going up against people like Andy Reid and Mahomes, you kind of have to sometimes, you know. That's how Burrow beat them and got to the Super Bowl, you know. So I think it's both of those things. And, you know, if they can do that, then I don't see why they couldn't win a Super Bowl. But regardless of whether they do or don't, you know, their window is closing fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wide open right now, but it's not going to be that way for much longer. I mean, like this year, and maybe next year if they're lucky. Just because you look at a lot of the talent on their team, they're getting older. And, you know, and the guys who are younger, I mean, we're seeing it with Brandon Ayuk. They're going to start demanding big paydays, mm-hmm. particularly Brock. He's going to be looking at one next year. You're not going to be able to keep all these guys. So, you know, they're going to have to start having those tough conversations of moving on from, you know, guys like Kittle, guys like Debo. I mean, you know, which you don't. Fred Warner, which, like, you don't want to, but, you know, if you're going to keep these certain guys, you're going to have to. And, you know, once you lose one of those guys, I mean, we see what happens. As Brandon was saying, it's like, they lose one of them, and the whole team struggles. So
yeah, the whole thing starts crashing down a little bit.
Yep. So, you know, it's, I will see. I'm not, yeah, I mean, like I said, they could definitely win it right now, but their window is, it's closing.
Yeah, it could be probably maybe 1 to 2 years, maybe this year and next year, and that's it for them.
Yeah,
for sure. So, yeah. Let's see, random players here. Josh Dobbs is the backup for Brock Purdy. Elijah Mitchell's still here.
Josh Dobbs seems like a weird fit there. So just me.
A little bit. Logan Thomas is their backup tight end this year. Yetrigos Mathis is here. Rocky Sin got traded here, I think. But yeah. X Factor players for you guys. Shane, go ahead.
I mean, I think it's got to be the man himself, Purdy. I mean, we know that, you know, we know what they can do. Just, we know what their floor is, you know, if everybody's healthy, but I think their ceiling really depends on what Brock can bring, what he can do. So I, you know, I think a lot of this is going to unfortunately rest on him.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Brandon, what about you?
You know, I want to say, you know, you can pick so many talented guys in this team, but all these guys have stepped up. Like, you know, you can't say Bosa. Bosa can't do much more than what he's doing. Greenlaw, Warner, they all can't, you know, CMC, Debo, IU, Kittle, you know, Trent Williams, like all the guys, Trent Williams, you know, Kyle Juszczyk. I mean, they've all done their job. I mean, it's crazy. Like, if we were allowed to say the same X Factor, I would have said Brock Purdy too. But
I think he's clear number one for X Factors here for sure.
Yeah, because he's going to have to be. But I think if there's a second X Factor to me, just between looking at this lineup and looking just at kind of the whole picture here, you know, I'm probably gonna say the coaching here. I'll say Shanahan, you know, because I'm just, you know, Brock Purdy has the talent to go further, and I know that, you know, with the Shanahan system, you know, they're kind of at where they're at. But yeah, that's one thing I kind of forgot about. I got kind of lost in the weeds talking about what Purdy can do. Is yeah, you know, Shanahan can't really call a game in the last quarter, really. Or really a quarter and a half of a lot of these games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
if they're behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, if they're behind. And that's the problem. It's gonna happen in the playoffs. You're not gonna lead every single game in the playoffs. So if you fall behind and you can't adjust in the playoffs, especially with what we've seen out of them, of course you're not gonna win a Super Bowl. So my X factor for them has to be Shanahan, because if it's not Purdy, it's him. Those are the two guys, because everyone else on this team does their job. Everyone else on this team is phenomenal. You know, everyone else on this team is an all-pro, pro bowler, all these different things, you know. So when looking at that as a whole picture, I really don't want to pick any of them, because they do what they got to do. There's not much more you can ask out of that defense. It's the number one defense in football last year. There's not much more you can ask, you know, out of the really all the offensive guys, because they make Purdy look a lot better than probably what he is right now, even though I think Purdy can get to another level. But since Shane picked Purdy, I will take Shanahan. I still think the X Factor is Purdy, but if there's a close second, it's Kyle Shanahan.
I'm going to go with Tagovailoa Hufanga. I think he has been really good for them lately. He just hasn't gotten the love at the safety position that he needs to.
He's very underrated.
He's very, very underrated. I think he'll be important. This secondary is not much to write home about, to be honest. So he's going to have to be the leader for this group for sure. All right, Brandon, I'll let you finish on the California teams going to the LA Rams. Can we push their expectations a little bit higher this season?
I think we can. I think, you know, these between them in Seattle, that's obviously the battle for 2 and 3, right? It's one of those things where I look at the Rams, and on paper, you know, to me, they're still a very good team. I still look at them, and I see a lot of promise, obviously. I see, because, you know, Matt Stafford can play through injury, but Matt Stafford's Matt Stafford. You know, Kyron Williams and Blake Corum, and now they got Boston Scott. They got my boy, the Giant Killer. but, you know, those two of the three guys are a good, that's a good running back room. You know, Cooper Kupp, Tutu Atwell, Puka Nacua. You know, those guys would be a nice kind of three guys that I think are really good. And they each are pretty fast, dynamic. We know what Cooper Kupp is. Puka Nacua was outstanding last year. And so he'll only get better. Higbee is a pretty, you know, good tight end. He's underrated. I like his game a lot. Steve Avila, I think, is really nice at center. You know, Havenstein, he's not bad as well, right tackle. Bringing in, Jared Verse in the draft is insane, you know, and Braden Fisk. Both so those two guys, you know,
guys, man.
Both yeah, that helps. They've got a connection there. You know, Kobe Turner was great last year, obviously. Tre'Davious White, bringing him in, that's huge at corner because they've struggled there a little bit. Cameron Curl's there. It's still, you know, a good roster. People don't give the, you know, listen, it's the Rams. We know, like, hey, they're not really a football, you know, area. It's L.A. But, you know, when you look at kind of what the Rams are, especially with how talented Sean McVay is as a coach, I don't see, I mean, that team can make a push for the one spot to win that division. But, I mean, I still probably think they end up probably second. But it's not going to be without a fight from Seattle. But I think the Rams can make the playoffs. And I think they could probably win a game with that roster. I don't see why not. You know, when I kind of look at that team as a whole, just the talent is, I mean, it might not be super deep, so they have to worry kind of about getting injured, but the talent they do have is pretty, pretty good. And if anybody knows how to get, you know, the most out of their talent besides Shanahan, it's Sean McVay. So, you know, when you have another talented coach like that and a talented, you know, potential Hall of Fame QB, and you have a bunch of, you know, the talented roster, not as talented as San Fran, but still a talented, you know, roster. I think that they can be sneaky. You know, they might not be on a lot of people's radars, but this team did win 10 games last year. And, you know, they did make a playoff game, and they barely lost to the Lions, who the Lions should have made a Super Bowl appearance last year. So, you know, they might have lost in the wild card. I think they win a wild card game. I think they have the potential to win a divisional round game. I think they can, you know, if 10 wins is where they were at last year and they've gotten better, I think they can get to 11 or 12. I think the Niners will win probably 13 or 14. But I think this team can win 11 or 12 games, get that second seed and get a nice kind of, you know, game or two out of the playoffs. I don't see why they can't make that run. You know, Sean McVay is pretty much the second most creative guy next to Kyle Shanahan in football. So, and obviously he's a younger coach still. So I don't see why they really can't, you know, push for that division title in the NFC West. I don't think they will, but I don't see why they couldn't push for it, especially if the Niners kind of have a little bit of injury troubles, or if the pressure of trying to get back to the Super Bowl, because remember, the Super Bowl hangover is real even for the loser. So we saw that with Philly last year. So, you know, it's definitely going to be hard for the Niners to get back, so they could surprise a lot. You know, they are one of the few teams where you look at them in a division where they're going against the Niners. That's a team that could probably cause an upset and maybe win the division. I don't think they will. I still think it would be the Niners. I still think that's pretty clear. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Rams make a push for that division title.
Shane, you think they're close to a division title as well?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I think they're definitely in the mix. You know, it's the Rams are tricky for, or not tricky, but well, kind of, because they, you know, I mean, when you look at their starting talent, I mean, the studs everywhere. You know, obviously you lose Aaron Donald. That sucks. You know, greatest defensive lineman in the last 20 years, probably, if not ever. And, but, you know, you bring in Jared Verse, and you got whoever the other rookie was, who you just mentioned. But, yes, thank you. Yeah, but, you know, there's also other good moves. Like, for instance, bringing in Tre'Davious White was kind of went under the radar, I think. But that's, I mean, that's a really good signing, in my opinion. You know, and I guess the only real issue is a lot of their guys that are, you know, their key pieces, like Stafford, Kupp, Havenstein on the offensive line there, Tre'Davious White, you know, these are all older guys who, you know, they have some injury problems. So I just worry a little bit about, you know, their depth, because I know that they're going to have injury problems, unfortunately. But, you know, assuming they stay at least mostly healthy, you know, I don't see any reason why. I mean, they won 10 last year. I don't see why they can't win 11 or 12 this year. I'll go with a conservative estimate and say 11, just because, you know, with the injury concerns and whatnot, and just looking at their schedule. But still, I mean, you know, that's probably a fifth or sixth seed, and I would imagine, or I shouldn't say I would imagine, I wouldn't be surprised if they got a wild card win and, you know, maybe made a push for the NFC Championship. I mean, I don't know if I'm willing to go that far yet, but I think they could certainly be in the mix. Yeah. Yeah, 11, 12 wins, and I think San Fran probably wins like 13. So, you know, just right behind them.
Yeah, I think the depth is certainly a concern, but overall, this roster is a lot better than I think a lot of people will look at going into the season. Let's see, Jimmy Garoppolo's the backup. He's dealing with a suspension the first few weeks of the season, but he will be the backup, along with Stetson Bennett, who this is pretty much his de facto rookie season after a tough year from personally last year. Brandon brought up the three running backs. I don't know. Kyron Williams in fantasy, that's a bit of a concern with the amount of depth they have, but we'll see when we get there.
Who cares about fantasy?
Shane, what are your X factors here? What's the biggest player for you?
You know, I'm going to have to say Jared Verse. I mean, you know, we know kind of what they're going to be offensively, assuming everybody is at least mostly healthy. But, you know, this is their first year without Aaron Donald in 10 years. So they're kind of in uncharted territory here with, you know, as far as like how their front seven's going to look. And, you know, he's going to be, he's slated to be a outside linebacker / like edge rusher, basically. So he's going to be right in the thick of it, you know, and just seeing what kind of an impact he's going to have, because I think their secondary is fine. You know, I mean, they're bringing in Tre'Davious White. I really liked what Kobe Turner's done so far. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's that front seven. How are they going to bounce back now that they don't have the Incredible Hulk on their defensive line there.
Brandon, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to stick on the defense too, and I'm going to talk about the guy that we both mentioned and now that Shane mentioned again. I'm taking Kobe Turner. Yeah. He had 9 sacks last year. He was in the running for Defensive Rookie of the Year. He made the All-Rookie team. He's only, he's 25, so he's going to be coming into his prime real soon. If he steps it up, especially with the loss, with the loss of Aaron Donald, if he steps it up, especially with Verse and Fisk being there, that's going to be a scary defense. And I think that the league is kind of not paying attention because all those guys are young. But young doesn't necessarily mean bad. And those are 3 young guys that I think any team would love to have. So I look at Kobe Turner. I mean, he finished the season real strong. But he came on really well by the end of the season. But, 9 sacks for a rookie is nothing to sneeze at. So, he should get well into the double digits next year. He should probably get maybe 12 or 13 sacks next year. I should say this upcoming season. And I think if he does that, because like Shane was saying, we know what that offense pretty much is going to be when they're healthy. So nothing's really going to change. I mean, Puka's going to have an even better year. Coop's getting older, but you're going to get out of him. Higby, same thing. The running back's more or less same thing. We know what Sean McVay does. Sean McVay is similar to Shanahan. It's kind of like, hey, just continue being you, be creative, and let's see what happens, because you're a very good offensive mind. So if I had to pick anybody, it's Kobe Turner. That kid's explosive. He's also, he's just built really well. He's 6'2". He's damn near 300 pounds. And he's got to make up for, just like the rest of the guys in that line, he's got to make up for the loss of Aaron Donald, which is no easy task. But if anybody can do it, those 3 guys especially can do it. But Kobe Turner is probably my pick just because if I'm going to pick one of those 3 guys and one of them's already off the board, why not pick the guy that was special, that was in the Defensive Rookie of the Year running last year? So Kobe Turner is my pick for this X Factor for this team.
I'm going to go Cameron Curl. I really like this guy. I liked him ever since he was in Washington. It's an underrated pickup for the Rams. Obviously, we're talking about how good the secondary is. He's a really good addition for them. That secondary is going to be forced into a lot of moments if the D-line is going to struggle early in the season, which it could, considering how young it is. Cameron Curl is going to be a big part of that for sure. All right, Shane, we go to our neck of the woods here in Seattle. Mike McDonald heading up the ship in Seattle. What do you feel about this roster?
First of all, when I was talking about the secondary of the Rams, and I said Kobe Turner, I meant Kobe Durant.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
That was driving me crazy, so I apologize. Anyways, how I feel about the Seahawks. Yeah, I think a head coaching change was long overdue for Seattle. Nothing against Pete. Love him. And, he's my guy. But it's just, I think it's clear that he just wasn't the right fit anymore. Which is fine. That happens. And I look at Mike McDonald and what he has been able to do really everywhere he's gone at the collegiate and professional level as a coordinator, and I don't see why he won't be able to continue that on. I mean, obviously being a head coach is much different than being a coordinator, so you never know. The players think very highly of him, or at least that's what they say. I mean, who knows? They could be lying. he seems very intelligent, very calculated, which is good. I mean, that's what you want in a head coach. And, they've made a lot of free agent moves that I think are really kind of underrated. I mean, you look at it and you go, oh, really? They wanted this guy? That? And, you know, it's not like a bunch of stars, but it's a lot of guys who will fit his defense very well. You know, I don't think Pete always drafted or got free agents with that in mind necessarily. He just was like, oh yeah, this guy's good, let's get him, you know. Whereas this feels very particular. This is like, okay, this guy's a great, you know, Jerome Baker's a, or Terrell Dodson, they're great linebackers in pass coverage, I want that. Or, you know, this guy's good at this, so I want him, but so on and so forth. So, you know, they finished with 9 wins last 2 years, and I think the roster over this offseason, I don't know if it upgraded necessarily, but I think it's just better equipped for what the coach wants to do now. So, you know, I could see him, since they won 9 last 2 years, you know, I could see this group winning 10 or 11. You know, it's, I don't think they're going to do a whole lot better than that this year, because, you know, it just, it is a lot of new, you know, new coordinators, new system, whatever, new players even. And, you know, when you look at their offense, you know, I think Geno is a fine bridge player, but there's definitely limitations there. We all know that. So, you know, you never know, though. I mean, Howell might take over as the year goes on, or who knows? We'll see. He should, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But at the same time, though, I wouldn't want to rush him into it, you know, because he got dealt a pretty shitty hand in Washington, and he definitely needs, like, a reset. So I would not rush him in at all. But eventually, I would like to see it. Anyways, but, you know, you look at the rest of the offense, you know, it's pretty solid. You got 2 really good backs, 3 receivers who, I mean, none of them are, like, amazing, but they're all very solid. Offensive line, never been Seattle's strong suit, but, you know, I think they're going to be just okay. I mean, you know, Laken Tomlinson is a decent addition. But, you know, it's nothing amazing, I guess. So, yeah, I think, you know, all that considered, I see him winning about 10, maybe 11 if things go well. And, you know, maybe sneaking into a 7th seed, and then, you know, just because I don't... This year, they're not, like, going for a Super Bowl, I don't think, you know, and I don't think that's their expectation. That's, well, I mean, yes, it is, but you know what I mean. But I think it's more just starting and building, setting up for what they want to be, where, you know, in the next couple of years, maybe they're a little more Super Bowl ready. So, yeah, that's where I am with them.
Brandon, what say you?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same playing field as Shane. The roster, you know, hasn't gotten a major upgrade. Like, it's not, obviously not the Rams, and it's not the Niners. You know, I almost feel like, though, that when it comes to this division, this is the division where you could see potentially 3 teams making the playoffs. I mean, yeah. Will they? I mean, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, they did win 9 games last year, it wasn't dysfunctional, like, you know, as bad as a lot of other teams, but still, you know, kind of dysfunctional. You know, still rolling out Pete's old system from, you know, 2012. You know, so it's definitely, you know, fresh coach, fresh ideas, more of a defensive mind. That's, you know, you want a guy who's, you know, knows what he's doing defensively, especially with this kind of team. But I just look at it. I mean, nobody knows Sam Howell better than my division and me. So I've seen Sam Howell play a ton. I want him to start. I don't want to say like right away, but if Geno doesn't get it within like a month, maybe month and a half.
I was thinking
put Sam Howell. Yeah, then you put Sam Howell in and you let it ride, because Sam Howell is too damn talented to be sitting on the bench behind a lackluster quarterback. So I mean, I don't hate Geno, but Geno's not the answer. Especially with a new head coach, first year head coach for this team, why not give him a pretty much for the most part a rookie quarterback, a second year quarterback? So, you know, I think that would really help. But I keep thinking with the Seahawks, I don't know if they get better than 9 wins, just because it's a little bit of it's a whole coaching change, it's a whole philosophy change. Usually when head coaches change, it takes a couple years to kind of start getting like significant improvement, obviously. So, I mean, I don't know if I see 11 wins. I see probably, I'll say one more. I can either see them staying the same and winning 9, or I can see them just getting one more and getting to 10. I mean, I still think that's good enough to make a push. Like, they should still be in the playoff conversation by the end of the season, and they usually are anyway. So, you know, they'll still make things interesting. I still think, especially maybe early on in the season, they kind of might give, or maybe towards the middle of the season, they'll probably give, the division a little bit of a run. But other than that, this team kind of just really stays the same. You can't sleep on some of the guys that do it. They do have some very talented guys that we don't think about. When you look at the roster, Noah Fant is there. I want him to be used more. Lakin Tomlinson, not a bad addition. Darren Reed was great last year. He had 7 sacks last year. People kind of forget that. He kind of gets lost in the fold. Leonard Williams is now there.
And their leading sacker, Boye Mafe, last year.
Yeah. He's there. Don't forget about Byron
Murphy coming in out of Texas.
There's plenty of guys there. You still got Woolen there on your corners. Woolen, Spoon. I like those guys a lot. Pro
Bowler last year as well, a lot better than like the Giants.
Like there's a lot to like. I feel like they're a very underrated roster, because KW3 is great. Charbonnet is great when you can give him kind of a little bit more of a workload. I feel like DK Metcalf is Metcalf. Lockett does what he does. Hell, even Jake Bobo had a run at one point. Jackson Smith and Jake, but nice.
Thank you
it's
for
very
mentioning
nice.
Our man Bobo. Thank you.
Because listen, I think that this team can do some good things. I don't, people kind of look at them and they laugh because they haven't been great the past few years. They've kind of just been one of those middling teams. Let's see if we can get over 500 or make a run at that last wild card spot, what have you. But it's still Seattle. Seattle always plays hard. Like no matter what the outcome is, win or loss, at least from what I see, I rarely see Seattle getting blown out in games. It's always a fight to the finish, it feels like, when watching Seahawks games. And I like a lot of the things that they do. So like I said, it's going to be them and the Rams battling for second and third, but I it's one of those things where I think the Seahawks can sneak into the playoffs, and then, they probably won't win a game, but they can sneak in, and that would just be impressive, given first-year head coach and a quarterback room where you don't kind of know what's going on, because the 3 quarterbacks, all of them are different. We'll see, but the defense has the pieces, definitely has the pieces to make some noise. The offense, your 2 positions at running back and wide receiver are set. You know what you've got there. So the big question mark is, what does the offensive line look like? because Geno Smith, I believe, has I don't remember if I'm correct in this matter. You guys can correct me. Geno's been like one of the top five like sack quarterbacks in the NFL last year.
Yeah, this whole line is not very good or hasn't been good the last few years.
So last year really, especially
that,
last year.
He wasn't that high up.
But he was I think he probably was at least top 10, but I don't.
Hold on.
Yeah. Let me check. I know. Yeah, I know. I know he was high. I don't know if he was top 5 or top 10, but I know he was high. Like, I know he was. He had to be because he got sacked a lot.
Sam Howell was the most sacked. 65. That's so bad.
Yeah, that's insanity.
Put him in your worst offensive line article, Brandon. Put Washington because yikes.
Oh my goodness.
Geno was 15.
Okay. Wow. I thought he was in the top 10.
Yeah, no, I knew it wasn't that much, but yeah.
Well, you know why? There was a lot of times where he rolled out of pressure and had to throw the ball away too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's probably why I was thinking. 31
times.
That's probably why I was thinking he got sacked more, because there was a lot of times where he had to like do some like Houdini stuff and then throw the ball away.
My thing with this team, simply put, is Geno. Like he's not the future, right? So Brandon and I keep pushing. Sam Howell should be the guy, right? Brandon and I keep pushing this, right? Like we watched a bunch of him, Brandon, last season, and he was special. And I think he should start right away. He probably won't, but if not him, they're gonna need something, right? The Mike McDaniel era won't be defined by Geno, will be defined by someone else. That's the long term question. For the short term, I think this team could put out a good showing next season, although yeah, Geno's really the biggest worry for me, for sure. Brandon, go ahead with who's your X factor for this team.
Got it. It's I'm not gonna say head coach again. It's first year head coach. I'm not gonna say the head coach again because that's kind of a wash when you have a first year head coach. I love KW3. Kenneth Walker III. I want him to come to Philadelphia out of the draft when he came out. I wanted him desperately.
Well,
going back on it, I wanted Kenneth Walker III badly, like more than life itself. That's all I talked about at that point. But I'm not gonna pick him as X Factor. He's gonna be fine. Him, Metcalf, Lockett will be fine. You know, quarterback is definitely gonna be where we're gonna have to look. But you know who my X Factor is, and I'm not gonna say the offensive line because they have to be better. Obviously, everybody knows that. But if I'm picking X Factor, and I screamed it last year, and I'm sure you guys at least remember me saying this a little bit, use him more. And it's Noah Fant.
Yep.
Use him. Yeah. Use him.
Because I think they will.
He's only, people forget, he's been around for a little bit now. Last year was his fifth year. He's only 26. He's not even close to 30 yet. He's only 26. He'll be 27 in November. The back end of November. So for a little bit more than half of this year, he will be 26. He's still young. And when he does get the ball, he can do wonders. That when he was in Denver, every single season he had over 560 yards receiving. And that was not, and he wasn't getting like a ton of targets, but he was or a ton of receptions, but he was making the most of it. But if you look at since coming to Seattle, he went from getting 93 targets in 2020 and 90 in 2021 to then in 22 with Seattle getting 63 and then last year only getting 43. And if you want your quarterbacks to succeed, you have to give them that safety valve. It can't be all on your wide receivers and it can't be using your running backs out of the backfield. You've got to have a dependable, solid tight end. What is Noah Fant? That's exactly what he is. If you get him the ball, he can make things happen. He's only fumbled once in his career in 5 years too. So you don't have to worry about ball security. You don't have to worry about him, you know, being ineffective, because when he gets the ball, he can make things happen. He's had how many touchdowns? He's had 14 touchdowns in 5 years. So he's going to average about 3 touchdowns a year. But if you get him the ball, that number could be 5 or 6 because that's how good he is. Like he can be, and instead of 600 yards, he can definitely get maybe close. Especially because he's probably entering his prime now at 26, he could probably get close to 700. I think he's the X factor. If Geno Smith is going to return to the kind of comeback player of the year level we were talking about in 22, or if Sam Howell is going to have any help when he eventually becomes a starter. That is the perfect safety valve and option you want on a team. I want to see Noah Fant succeed because I know we all know how talented of a tight end he can be. He doesn't get talked about enough, but he is talented. He is my X factor for that offense. That defense is going to be fine. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about outside of your receivers and your running back, you know, they can't do it all. That tight end spot is very important, and it gets overlooked a lot in the NFL. There's only a top three to top five that we talk about. But the teams that go far are the teams with good tight ends. Philly, Baltimore, the Niners. What do they all have? They have great tight ends. So
Kansas City, Detroit.
Obviously Kansas City. So, you know, I forgot about Travis for a second. My brain went dead. I'm sorry. but you know what I mean.
More, lol.
and you know, I think Noah Fant can be that X factor. He's so important if this team wants to succeed, especially with a first year head coach, especially in an offense that needs something else other than what they have, and you have it right there in front of you. So use it. Noah Fant is my X factor for your Seahawks.
All right, Shane, what say you here?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that the Seahawks in the Pete Carroll days kind of wasted tight ends. Yep. I mean, you had Jimmy Graham, who was at the time like a top three tight end, and did absolutely nothing with him. But, you know, now they've got Ryan Grubb, offensive coordinator. And if you look at what the Huskies did with tight ends last year, they were everywhere. So I feel like Fant is going to be more involved this year, and I'm here for it. I love the guy. Let's see. My X factor. You know, when you look at the offense, it's relatively the same. I mean, as far as their 11 guys that are going to be starting, but there's a lot of new guys on the defense. And, you know, the guy who I think is, you know, kind of right in the middle, the nucleus of it, is Devin Witherspoon, because he is, I mean, you saw him last year. He was everywhere. Like, he was picking off passes, in pass coverage, tackling running backs, sacking the damn quarterback. Like, I mean, he was just a machine that could not be stopped. And so, you know, I think he's, Mike McDonald has already spoken very highly of him, saying he's one of the most intelligent players he's ever coached. You know, so I think he, you know, this defense has been awful for several years now, under defensive head coach Pete Carroll. And
work with the roster, Pete.
Yeah. God, Stevie Wonder could have seen that. But anyways, you know, but now with the new defensive regime, you know, you're going to need a guy who's sort of at the helm with it. And I think it's Spoon. You know, he was everywhere last year. I imagine he will be again this year. You know, we saw last year with Mike McDonald, it was, you know, Kyle Hamilton was this guy who was just kind of everywhere, like his chess piece. I think that's Spoon's going to be his guy doing that this year. I'm very excited to see how he continues to grow. And I think he's, to me, he's kind of the key piece here.
For me, it's going to be the rookie Byron Murphy. I think he's such an underrated draft pick. We talked very highly of him in the pre-draft process. And should the Seahawks did as well, picking him up. He's going to come in and start pretty soon here in this depth chart, probably as soon as preseason week 3, I would think. He's going to be really important for kind of getting this defensive line, giving Leonard Williams and Boye Mafe some help. I think he's going to be really, really important for what they do here moving forward. All right. Call of Duty's coming out, Shane. Do you think that's going to affect the Cardinals at all this year?
Well, I don't see how it would. probably not. We'll see, though.
Hesitation says it all.
Kyler. Cardinals, I think, are an easy fourth place team for me in this division. You know, offensively, I think they're really actually pretty solid for the most part. I mean, you know, when Kyler's hot, he's a really good player. I think people kind of forget about him because he kind of has his up and down moments and injury problems. But but when he's cooking, I mean, yeah, he's one of the best. James Conner, really solid back. Of course, you know, Marvin Harrison being the nice new addition there. I assume he is going to smack it in the pros, but, you know, we'll see. Trey McBride, too, tight end. Really underrated tight end, in my opinion. The other thing, too, is that I think their offensive line is kind of slept on. Particularly the right side of that offensive line.
Yeah.
I like what they got going on over there. The problem with this team is on the defensive side, particularly the front seven. I think their secondary is fine. I mean, they're not like amazing, but you know, you got like Sean Murphy Bunting is solid. Buda Baker's obviously a stud. Shout out Washington guy. But you look at the front seven, and yeah, there's definitely some room for improvement. to put it nicely. And even though they had a defensive head coach, or have a defensive head coach, and you know, last year obviously being his first season, Brandon's favorite, Jonathan Gannon.
Oh, hell. I'm just going to say, Brandon, I was going to do feel like, what do you think of your head coach, your favorite head coach, Jonathan Gannon, but continue, Shane.
Yeah, no, no, his favorite new head coach is in the AFC South, but we'll get to him shortly. So despite having a defensive minded head coach, things didn't really get better for them last year on that side of the ball. I don't think they will this year either. I mean, I don't even, yeah. I don't think this guy could motivate his players to run through a paper sign. Like,
you can't motivate me to get off my couch and make a sandwich.
Yeah, seriously. So, yeah, I think, you know, assuming Kyler stays healthy and isn't playing too much Call of Duty, I think on offense they'll be just fine. They're not going to be like a top five unit, but you know, it's like, yeah, they'll be able to score points and keep up with guys, but defensively, man, ooh, like I said, they got some redeeming qualities in the secondary there, so you know, they might give you some trouble like in the pass defense, but I feel like, you know, you look at the rest of their division. I mean, they've got, you know, every other team in their division has two really good running backs who will just be able to destroy them. CMC, Elijah Mitchell. Yeah. Good luck. Who else? Kyron Williams. Blake Corm, Kenneth Walker, Zach, yeah, like have fun with that. This front seven is not going to be able to do shit against them. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just true. I feel like last year, how did they win last year? 4-5?
Yeah. Some with Josh Dobbs there.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to say less.
Yeah. I mean, one? You know, just no. I mean, considering how, considering what they've got going on offense, I feel like they'll be okay. Not good, but like, you know, maybe 6-7 wins. Not, you know, nothing great, but like a little bit better than last year. But yeah, I'm not expecting much. Let's put it that way.
Brandon, are we going to have to eliminate this team from what do we call it? The worst games?
Pocket game of the week.
The pocket. Are they going to have to be removed next year for the first month again?
They might have to be. And it's funny because they were fun eventually. But
yeah,
it was like,
they were fun last year.
But, oh my God. But yeah, for that first month. I mean, listen, Kyler Murray being healthy is so important.
Yeah.
And James Conner did not have a bad season. James Conner rushed for over 1,000 yards and had 7 TDs. So, to go along with 2 receiving TDs, he had 9 total TDs last year. He wasn't bad at all. But, my God, you know, their team is pretty much, you know, it's like we're saying. I mean, the other 3 teams in the NFC West are far better. On both sides of the ball. I mean, can we honestly say that perhaps their best player might actually be Matt Prater?
Buddha.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm just joking. I'm just playing around, but because it obviously is Buddha, but you know,
Brandon.
I'm one of my friends is actually, you know, is a Cardinals fan, so I'm happy for him getting. Yeah, I forget the story of how, but he told me once or twice, and I just keep forgetting because I'm like, bro, your team is so irrelevant, I don't care. And why would you put yourself through that torture? I guess beyond me. I thought I had it bad, but I really don't want to see a lot of other teams in the league.
And I've been to Phoenix twice. It's a lovely place. I love it down there. But like, God, yeah, that's having to be a sports fan. It's like,
why would you want to suffer in the desert in 115 degree heat to watch the Cardinals lose by 20? It's beyond me.
Hey, they're more expensive than the Panthers tickets this year, at least.
God. Listen.
I would rather watch the Cardinals than the Panthers. I will say.
I could sell tickets to me swimming in the Passaic River. That would cost more and be more of a show than the Carolina Panthers.
We'll get to them soon.
But yeah, but with the Cardinals, you know, I mean, it's a lot of. There's actually a couple of Eagles there. Zach Pascal, who I liked, but he's there now. Kaiser White is important. Their backup, actually, their second string strong safety. I forget how to pronounce his last name, but Andre Chachere. I forget how to pronounce his name. Former Eagle as well. But that doesn't say much when your head coach is the man I literally despise for costing us a Super Bowl.
You do?
Yeah. Shocker.
I remember our podcast after that Super Bowl. You were like, God, Jonathan Gannon, I will find you and kill you. or something to that effect.
Do you realize I still lose sleep over that game to this day, and it's been 2 years?
I love how that is a more entertaining conversation than the actual team.
Or I should say, a year. But I lose sleep over that game nonstop because that team was a team of destiny that Jonathan Gannon ruined. So.
Hey,
I hate it with every fiber.
He can't motivate you to make a sandwich.
Like, there's no. That's the problem. Like, if they had a better head coach, I have some faith in them to win maybe like 7 games. But you have a crap head coach to match your crap team. So, like,
I'd rather have Cliff Kingsbury. Like, dude.
Oh God! I mean, Jesus, man. Like,
let him coach in Saudi Arabia or wherever the hell he went.
And you know what's bad? If God forbid Kyler Murray gets hurt, you have Clayton Tune and Desmond Ridder battling for that backup position. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. But, oh my God. Oh my God. Like,
at least one of them has some starting experience.
Like, come on. Come on, man.
Jesus. It's like in Avengers Infinity War when Loki's like, I do have some experience on Earth, and Thanos is like, you consider failure experience?
Like, do I like Will Hernandez on the offensive line? Of course I do. Do I like Jonah Williams? Yeah, I really do, and even Beecham to a degree. You know, I liked Kazir White in Philly, but last year wasn't great. But on the defensive side, I love Buda Baker, potential pretty much Hall of Famer. Sean Murphy Bunting, you know, Super Bowl champion. You know, and he's still only 27. He's still really good to me. He's very underrated in my eyes. Max Melton, rookie. He can turn a lot of heads. And I think he might this year. They brought him in for that reason. You know, but I just don't think they probably just finished where they finished last year. I don't see them winning more games. I really don't. I mean, maybe one if Kyler's healthy and Marvin Harrison Jr. is as advertised. Like, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is as advertised, they maybe win two more games. Maybe. But, like, you know, he's not going to, you know, the rebuild starts really with him, with MHJ. So, you know, I look at that and I'm like, okay, that's really the only thing I really want to talk about here, because I'm just like everybody else, is kind of just, they are what they are. We know what they are.
Is he your X factor, clearly?
Oh, God. I mean, he kind of has to be, because nobody else is really going to be any good besides him and him, Connor, and Murray. And, of course, we know what their defense is. Like, we know what, and Murphy Bunny's going to be fine. Baker's going to be fine. I kind of want to pick Max Melton, but when you have another rookie by the name of MHJ, of Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm going to pick Marvin Harrison Jr. So, like, I feel like, you know, it's insane. It gives Kyler actually a big receiving target, finally, and Kyler needs that because he's all 5'5 on a good day. And, you know, 21 years old, he came out of college, you know, for a reason. They're saying he's going to be just like his father. Guy's tall, 6'4", you know, 6'4", 205. And you got him where you got him because, A, he was the obvious pick for you at that spot in the draft. And you want to start the rebuild with somebody like that? That is a great place to start. So, you know, they're not going to win, many games, obviously. You know, they're obviously going to be a clear fourth, a distant fourth in this division. But if there's a good place to start, if there's a silver lining, it starts with MHJ. Kyler Murray, we need to see what he's like when he's fully healthy and focused. That's the key part. The healthy part is like first, but focused is probably even more important, because it seems like when he's obviously, even when he's healthy, when he's not focused, he's not good. I mean, you can have any quarterback, but especially for him, he tends to get derailed in his focus pretty often and pretty easily. So, you know, MHJ is my easy X factor, just because I wouldn't know who else to really pick, and it damn sure ain't going to be their head coach. So, yeah, MHJ is my X factor. He just, because he has to be. He's the guy you want to start building around, and, you know, and you want to see what Kyler Murray has. He'll make Kyler Murray better. He's the best target Kyler Murray's ever had. So we'll see. But he's my X factor.
Shane, who's your X factor from this team?
Well, you know, MHJ might be the best target he will ever have, but I think in the past, that'd have been prime D-Hop when he was there the first couple of years.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyways. Oh God.
Where do you go?
Do you need time to think about it? Because I already have mine.
You know what? No, I'll say Kaiser White, just because, you know, we know, like I was saying, you know, we kind of know more or less how the offense is going to be, assuming everybody's healthy. And then, you know, you got like Buda Baker and Sean Murphy Bunting. The secondary's fine. I mean, it's not great, but like, whatever. But that front seven, I mean, he's like, you know, you got to have that veteran present, because this is a very young team for the most part. So I think, you know, you really need that veteran presence right in the middle of the defense there in the front seven. And, you know, he gives you some stability at that position, and just to kind of be the leader, more or less. And, you know, you're going to have to do something with that front seven. And I think that starts with him being the middle linebacker, kind of calling the shots and hopefully being a bit of a playmaker. So we'll see.
And he knows Gannon's defense too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
And the thing is also with Philly, he did have over 100 tackles last year, only at 50. So he's going to have to step up.
Like 90 total though. I think that was just like 50 solo.
Yeah, let me check real quick.
But either way.
But still, yeah, it was a dip in it. Yeah, it was 90 together, but it was a dip in production anyway. So it's going to have to be, you know, a little bit better. He's going to have to be kind of where he was in Philly, and if he does, that also helps. So that does help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be Greg Dortch. I'm going to take another receiver. If you guys didn't watch the Cardinals much, and I don't blame you for not watching the Cardinals last year, but I watched a good bit of
them. I watched them twice last year.
I watched them every week.
I'll see if you can guess which two games.
Both games, and that was it. Well, unless they were on prime time, which I think was a couple times last year, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, Greg Dortch
was
good.
I saw them more than that, but yeah.
Greg Dortch was really good. And I think he's the fourth receiver here. He should be up there a little bit more as we get towards the season. He's another target that is actually, I think, going to get a lot of opportunity with the teams potentially double-teaming Marvin Harrison Jr. So I'm excited to see what he can do. There's just exciting players on this team, not really an exciting team. Let's move forward and talk about Star Wars: A New Hope. Go ahead, Shannon, and lead us in here as we continue our Star Wars marathon here.
Something a little more exciting than the Cardinals.
Yay.
You know, this is is this the most famous movie of all time? It might be.
It probably is. Yeah.
Close.
Yeah. If not, it's up there. You know, there's a lot to be said about this film. You know, for starters, I think it's honestly kind of a miracle that it even happened when you look at A, how low the budget was, and B, just how many things there were going against it as far as the production. And, you know, it's the fact that it happened, with all things considered, and not just happened, but like was actually even competent as a movie is pretty incredible. You know, and it's easy to see why this movie spawned, you know, this franchise that's been going on for almost 50 years now and has probably hundreds of different titles, from movies to TV shows, to games, comic books, whatever, you name it. You know, and especially considering when it was made in the 70s, you know, the effects, I mean, you know, it looks a little dated now, but like it still looks pretty great.
That's the biggest thing I want to say really quick. It really holds up. Like it didn't bother me.
It does. Bit. Like it almost looks better than the prequels that came out in the early 2000s.
Yeah,
I would argue it does. Anyways, that's beside the point. but yeah, no, it's, you know, it still holds up pretty well. And on an $11 million budget as well, which is just insane. Obviously, that $11 million was a lot more in the 70s, mm-hmm. but still. you know, I think this is, it's just such an imaginative world, and I think this was such a great introduction to it. which we didn't even realize it at the time, or I guess they didn't, we weren't alive, but you know what I mean? And not only that, but it's a compelling story. It's like this very weird, strange, complex world, yet it feels so human and relatable. And there's this really pretty simple plot that you can just follow right through it. And, you know, in this, Robert, you remember this, but, you know, like in film school and whatever, there's the 7 different story types, and one of them is the hero's journey. And like, this is in every film textbook you read, and what the hero's journey talks about this movie.
Mm-hmm. It just is that. It's the perfect prototype of this.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most. I was saying earlier, this might be the most famous movie of all time. This is definitely the most famous hero's journey. without a doubt. And it's, you know, are there some movies that came after it in this series that are probably better? Yeah. But when you consider everything, like when it was made, what they could do with their budget, all that, you know, all that considered, it's pretty amazing. And to me, it's of all 11 movies, it's the second best still to this day. And I'm definitely not in the minority there. I think most people kind of have it right around there as well. You know, so, yeah. And I think what people like so much about this movie and this series in general, though, it's not the lightsabers or the, you know, the TIE fighters or whatever, all the cool stuff, which, I mean, yeah, that's all fun and everything, but it's really, it's the characters. That's what really, that's not what drew people in, but that's what made people stay. You know, Luke he's kind of annoying, you know, but that's why he has the hero's journey. And by the end of it, you're like, all right, you know, I respect this guy. And then you have Leia, who, I mean, growing up, I thought she was just like the best. I was like, man, look at this, you know, just like tough chick from the suburbs. Like, yeah, this is awesome. You know, and very sad when she died, by the way, rest in peace to her. And then, you know, of course, Han Solo, who's like probably the greatest sidekick ever. I mean, dude, just like very cool, but like not in a good way.
Young Harrison Ford, by the way. Jeez Louise. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, very young, all these people.
God.
And then, of course, you know, the most iconic villain ever, Darth Vader.
voiced by an iconic legend himself, James Earl Jones.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just amazing. And you know, not only that, but they after this movie, they kept it going and still made it great, but we'll get to that next week, obviously. let's see what else is there. There's a lot more, but you guys go.
I only have like a couple things to say. One, again, is just the simplicity. The characters draw you in completely. And I think the biggest thing is just like all of the weapons and stuff are fun. The action never wavers in this movie at all. It always just feels like there's something happening that's action related. And honestly, I remembered this movie more than Rogue One. I don't know, it just sticks with you, right? If you haven't seen it for a long time, like everything about this movie is memorable. It's not even really that long either. This movie is just super memorable. And even if for someone like me who's only watched it now twice, I was like, oh, wait, I remember this scene. I remember this. Like, it just sticks with you. And I think that's kind of the biggest note I can make for it. Brandon, go ahead.
It's, you know, it's like, it's, you know, we know the iconic, you know, opening, and we know, you know, we've come to expect, obviously, started with this movie in the almost late 70s, you know, 77. But this hits different when that opening hits. Everything hits different. The soundtrack, it's weird because we're so used to hearing it by this point, obviously. But for some reason, going back and rewatching it, it still hits different, like you're hearing it for the first time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it's you know, when you know, a lot of memorable quotes in this, obviously. My favorite, which has become, you know, an internet meme, with Obi-Wan Kenobi saying hello there, and then he just
I totally forgot about Obi-Wan too.
Yeah, and then the whole, you know, of course I know him. He's me. It's like, okay. Well, like that, I love the use of that meme so much. I even use that to this day for a lot of different reasons. But you know, it's crazy to think that. Now, I'm actually reading this. I don't know if this is true, because Wikipedia can also stretch the truth a lot. But apparently, Wikipedia, it says that this movie actually went $3 million over budget due to delays. And
yeah, I think that's true.
And it says that actually, like that everybody was concerned that it would be a bomb just because of that, just because it was already an expensive movie for its time, and it became even more expensive. And they were like, "Wow, this is going to bomb." And in the initial run, it made over $410 million.
Crazy.
And that's for 1977. So, good freaking God. But.
Which would be like billions today.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would be like,
we're not even talking about inflation here.
$1 billion. But it's just insane when you think about all the actors that came to prominence with this, and they pretty much all did with this. The only one that was really known before, well, somewhat known before, was Harrison Ford.
Well, and Alec Guinness, but
yeah.
But yeah.
But you know, well yeah, and then yeah, Alec Guinness, but you know, but in terms of like the main cast, you know, the one that was only a little bit known before this was Harrison Ford, but then this is what obviously what made him even bigger. I mean, he was big before. He had a couple, because I remember seeing a couple movies before this that my grandfather used to watch. One was American Graffiti. Everybody knows that one, but
oh yeah,
but
that's a weird movie.
Yeah, it is, but damn right it is. But yeah, but with this, it's just, you know, seeing this, and it's funny because I also think of the movie Spaceballs, because Spaceballs borrows a lot from the series, but especially this movie.
I gotta watch Spaceballs.
Spaceballs is funny. But with this, God, is it, it's, you know, what's so interesting about this too, is that, you know, George Lucas pretty much got this idea from Flash Gordon, from basically seeing Flash Gordon, which is kind of crazy that that's what it took to, you know, just kickstart it more or less. But yeah, even rewatching it now, I'm like, I can't believe how well, like we were just saying, how well the special effects hold up for its time. It's like, yeah, you can definitely tell it's the late 70s, but it's, but you know, those same graphics would not be out of place in the early 90s even. So, and that's, you know, a whole 15 years later, more or less. So it's, you know, the special effects in this movie were still pretty good. They were ahead of its time at that time, but they're still pretty good, you know, even going into to Y2K pretty much. So, and it's no surprise that this thing, you know, that this whole, especially the first trilogy, the original trilogy with 4, 5, and 6 is known for its, you know, the visual effects, and you know, obviously the story behind it. Everybody loves it. It's inspired, like we said, all the video games and costumes and comic books and shows.
Family Guy parodies and
and parodies.
Which are great, by the way.
Yeah. God, I kind of want to watch that when we're done with this whole series, because that's going to be a funny way to end it.
What, dude? Baseballs or the Family Guy thing?
No, the Family Guy. Either one, maybe both. Who knows?
Yeah, relax. We got four of the five main characters on the ship. I think we'll be fine.
It's so good. You know, obviously, this is where we get introduced to a lot of the sound effects too that we're used to. That, you know, the Wilhelm scream from R2-D2, which has become its own, you know, its own little meme. You know, the sound of the TIE fighters whizzing by. You know, it's so hard to look at them. You know, and it's a reason why it's one of, if not probably the greatest movie ever made, more or less, is because there's nothing like this. What else can you say is like this? What other series, or not even series, what other movie is like, you can't even fathom it. It's like, it's speechless to think about the life that this took on and how this parlayed not into just a whole series, but a whole just cultural phenomenon that we're still talking about almost 50 years later. Like, in 3 years, it'll be the 50th anniversary of this movie. And, you know, this series. So, it's crazy that, you know, not too many things in life are evergreen, but this is one of them, that will just continue to last. Like, just like we always say, like, in music, Elvis or Michael Jackson or Prince, like, their music will last for Beatles, or the Beatles, their music will last forever. Star Wars will last forever. It's a lot of it is to do with just the start of this series and with this movie. This is like, and you know what's crazy about it is it's so futuristic, but there's still a lot of subtle references to like the just 70s kind of culture in it. Because if you know anything about the 70s,
like their hair.
Well, yeah, their hair especially. But you know what I thought was weird watching this, though, and I thought it was out of place? When they're showing Luke and his Uncle Owen and his aunt, you know, in the opening, and they sit down to eat, and it's like those two are wearing like robes and stuff, and she's wearing almost like a traditional 70s outfit. Did you notice that? It kind of looks like...
I've never noticed that.
If you go back and look, it looks like she's wearing, like a jean jacket with, like a collar shirt sticking out of it. Like, she's almost wearing, like, a traditional 70s-looking outfit, which I thought was funny, because I'm like, well, that seems out of place in a futuristic... It's supposed to be a futuristic movie, and it's not, because that's clearly a 70s-looking thing. But... And even some of the dialogue... sounds straight out of the 70s, obviously it would be, you know, but it's, you know, if you know those little cheesy things, it's funny because it's futuristic, but it's also endearing to that time period. So it's funny because it was ahead of its time, but also very much in its time. And it's hard to pull off something like that where you could say, oh, and that's part of the reason why it's had so much appeal for as long as it has, especially, you know, obviously, this, like I keep saying, this, the movie that started the series. So the appeal of it, it'll just never die. And the thing is, and another thing about the 70s too, which also kind of, I think, plays a small part in why this was so big, is because you're cheering for, obviously, the Rebel Alliance. And if you know anything about Rebels and the 70s, that was the biggest time for counterculture. So,
yeah, a lot of comparisons to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, so looking at that, that's a big reason why this probably was as big as it was. There's just so many things, the jokes, the memes that have come out of this, the deeper meaning behind it, the endearing characters, the fact that it was ahead of its time, but also still in its time. There's so much to like about this. You can't hate it. You know, like, there isn't a 10 out of 10 movie. And like I said, it's not my favorite in the series. You know, I like Shane, you had it at 2. I think I have it at 3. But
it's the most important.
Yeah, but it's by far. If this wasn't successful, we wouldn't have the rest of what we know today. So, you know, that, especially with how the budget concerns and all the delays they had with it, this could have went very, very well the opposite way, and we never would have heard about this again. So, it's by far the most important, and not just in this series, probably in any series ever. Because even movies that bomb today will still get a sequel. Back then, if you bombed, you weren't getting a sequel.
You're done. Yeah.
So it didn't just bomb. It's one of the best movies ever made. So if I could, I'm not going to give it a 9.5. And no movie is a perfect 10 for whatever reason. This is probably I would give it a 9.8 out of 10.
I was thinking about my rating. I have to consider what it meant, obviously, for the time. So I'll do an 8.5, I think.
Yeah,
for me, I like Rogue One just a little bit more, but to be honest, I just feel like I can't just miss the importance of this movie and what it means for film in general.
Mm-hmm. For score, for art direction,
filmmaking, everything.
Yeah, another way too. This just came to my head. It's like another way that it feels like it's from that time too is, you know, you look at genres of movies that were popular at the time. The Western was really popular then, like Clint Eastwood and all that.
Yep.
This movie is kind of like a Western.
Western. Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. It starts with a boy on a farm who meets this old crazy religious guy. Okay. And they they live in this area. It's like just kind of a lot of outlaws and whatever. So then they go into this town and they go into a saloon. And while they're there, there's like some shootout and whatever. And then they meet this guy who's essentially a cowboy and his animal pet. I'm just saying, like, the writing's on the wall.
Right.
Yeah.
It's right. It's true.
When it comes to rating movies, I definitely, I always look at it like letter grades, like in school, as opposed to numbers. For me, it's like, an A+ is like, there's no A+, cause that's like perfect. But to me, this is an A, an example of an A, I think. Yeah, just because, not only is it a good movie itself, but it's just, what it means for everything else and just for film and entertainment in general. You can't deny that. One last thing, big reason why it still holds up to this day is that it's very little CGI and a lot of miniatures, like all the X-Wings and the Death Star, like everything. It's all just miniatures that were actually filmed. It's not, oh, let's CG this ship under here, which, okay. I mean, sure, you can do that, but, it's not going to... The human eye is still... can see, it's like, oh, that looks kind of strange. And then the prequels happened and miniatures went out the window.
And well, we can say the critical became CGI, which we'll get to at some point, hopefully.
Yeah, all the clone troopers that they have in the prequels, like the thousands of them, not a single one of them was practical.
Oh yeah, no,
not one.
You can see it.
They didn't even make a model.
Yeah, you can see it, which is
completely CG, which is hilarious.
But you know what's funny though? Like, I think because of meme culture, the critical reception of those movies has gone up over time. So
yeah, yeah, for the memes.
Yeah, I don't. I still don't think they're that bad though. Like they're bad for the era, and they're bad for just a lot of reasons. But I don't think they're still as bad as some critics. Oh, it's the worst movie ever made. I'm like, bro, like there's been worse than that. Stop that.
I think, yeah, I think the perception of them has changed due to what we got in the sequel trilogy. we'll get to that, but
I almost don't even want to talk about those movies. Except
we're gonna,
for like
we're gonna get to them soon.
Yeah, I know. Like The Force Awakens is worth it, and then everything else I'm just like, nah, it's shit. I don't want to talk about this.
All right, anything else before we call it a day?
No, I don't think so.
Brandon, we're
good.
Happy 7-Eleven. Go get your free Slurpees Slushies, whatever.
I just saw that. I'm actually going to run to 7-Eleven right after we do the pod. It's right up my street.
I don't need any more sugar at 9:30, so I'm okay.
Well, that sucks.
But I will say, Brandon, we are doing NFC East next week, so your division.
Let's go. Oh, my God. Be prepared for me to run all over that podcast. Unintended.
Oh, my God. All right. Mm-hmm. We will see you then. Talk to you all soon.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
See you guys. Have a good one.